Okay, hey everyone, this is Ian Schlackman. How's everyone doing? Along with...
Reverend Annie Chambers.
I'm sorry. It's okay. How you doing today, Reverend?
I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm just thinking about, you know, what I listened to. I really didn't want to, but I did. I listened to the president in his State of the Union address. Because they was making a big thing of it. So, you know, if you don't know, if you don't listen, you don't know. So I had to listen. And
right.
Then I listened to all the lies afterwards also.
With the Democratic response. With
the Democrats and the Republican response. And the independents. Mm. And the poll that they took, which, you know, that's a lie.
Mm.
But let's just get with what the president said first.
Mm.
His lies about all the things that he've done, and he kept having people to stand that, you know, he supposedly made a difference. Well, first of all, let's take prison reform.
Please, go ahead.
He did nothing for no prisoner reform.
Mm.
Because if he really did, he'd go in and investigate all the people. I can send him a whole list of names of people that's been in prison for over 40-some years or longer. That innocent. And I know that's innocent. Because they were just incarcerated and put in prison because they belonged to the Black Panther Party.
Wow.
Okay, that's that in itself.
Mm-hmm.
But for him, you know, they was instrumental in it, and he pardoned this young lady who did kill the man who was abusing her, and he wanted that to be known. And the black woman, he wanted that to be known that you know, she got out after he pardoned her from her drug, too. Well, right now, they still locking up young people.
Every
both
day.
Black and white.
Yeah.
And they're giving them terrible time. Now, you know, this drug situation, if they really wanted to deal with it, they'd have to go further than the little street dealers. Or even, you know, they never get the kingpins. They put the label on little street people.
Reverend, can I ask you a question? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he really went hard for support from the African-American community. I mean, what do you think about
that's
that?
That's exactly what he was working.
That's
the only reason he did the work on the prison reform. Situation.
He mentions black unemployment and Hispanic unemployment every time he speaks.
And black people are unemployed more now than in the last 20 years.
So do you, I mean, there are
Hispanic people, you know, people are survival. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
But for the lies that he tell, don't, you know, he talking about people have more. Where is the jobs? Mm-hmm. You got children, young. I call them children. They are adults because they done aged out of foster care and they done aged out of their parents taking care of them. And more homeless people than ever. If there are so many jobs, why do we have that many homeless people? Why do we have people on begging on the street?
Mm-hmm.
Drugs do a lot to people, but a lot of people don't like the situation they're in.
Right.
And if given a chance, they would do better.
Yeah.
We have more miseducated,
mm-hmm.
young people in this country. Times are so hard that people can't afford to even their health care.
Right.
You know, and I twice heard him even talk about health care. He have done more in his administration to hurt health care than ever was.
Right.
It have been in the last 20 years, tell you the truth. Even George Bush didn't do as much, as bad as he have done with health care. People are dying. They can't get their medicines. They can't go into the hospital. You just see people walking around like zombies. And for the people that say it, they approve of his state of address. Mm-hmm. You know, they must be rich people, because even these poor people that won't call themselves, and I call them poor, middle income, cannot make it either.
Do you think that's where he's going? He's trying to get the black rich folks on board?
Of course, I mean,
that
he
does
is.
Kind
of
make sense, right?
Yes. That's exactly where he's going. All black people that just want to admit to themselves that they in the same boat. They one paycheck away from being homeless.
We see prominent ministers in Baltimore who are middle class, upper middle class, go for Trump.
Yeah, you know why? Because they don't have to suffer. It is their congregation. They living off of their congregation. And if they had to do a job, really work, like Dante Hickman, have a job, or like Jamal Bryant.
Well, now you're going to say it. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
If they really had to have a job, them devils would, let me tell you, they have did more to pull the black race down than any white person could right here in this city.
Wow.
Because they hold positions that influence black, a great deal of black people right here in this city. Dante Hickman is a commissioner, housing commissioner, and he makes his money between the church and on the backs of the Pope. He got poor people giving him money, carrying money to the church. Now, you take Jamal.
Was Jamal the one that brought Bernie in?
Jamal, let me tell you. He brought Bernie in, but he threatened if the Democratic Party didn't give him what he wants. And he's the one that supported Trump. His own father was hurt.
So you got someone that went from Bernie to Trump.
Trump. And Jamal Bryan.
I think they went for Ben Jealous.
Yeah. Jamal Bryan.
All right.
That's who it was.
All right.
So we have to understand.
I mean, I saw the signs. I mean, I was out there. I mean, they were all
over the place.
I mean, I don't even know what to say, because a lot of these signs were homemade.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of them were in the area that his church is in. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think there are some, you know, I don't think that people want to talk about this.
People don't want to talk. That's another thing, see? That's why you hear me keep on talking about them statues. People like to hide stuff.
Right.
And poor black people, we will hide something. Don't say nothing. Terrible things be going on to us in our own family. That don't cut that out the house. Don't talk, we ain't trying to fix it. Just pretend it didn't happen. Pretend it didn't happen. Or what really used to get me, and still do get me, the Reverend said, I'm a minister. I'm an ordained minister. Ordained by God. Call me. Before I even got my license, before I even got ordained on this earth, but I'm going to tell you, when I was younger and even a grown woman, I could not deal with ministers because all my life I seen the lies. As a minister's child, I seen the lies. I hear the lies. It was like, you know, the minister said something. It's like God done said it. Wow. It's like God done spoke to you. Well, it's a lie. It's a lie. And we have got to stop this.
Right.
We have got to stop this. We got to say, no, you will not treat us any kind of way. We're always looking for somebody to lead us. Moses is dead. Joshua is dead. God took them on to heaven. And I'm telling you, he left us here. We got a mind. Think for yourself. Started out way back, long before Dr. King. You know? And it just keeps compiling. Even now, I listen to Jesse Jackson with his lying self.
God.
I listen to Al Sharpton with his lying, pimping self. I listen to them. And I say, when will black people learn enough to say this is not right? I remember when we was in Washington.
I'm glad you're telling this story. This is the Poor People's Campaign in 2018.
That's right. And I wanted him to know that he was lying.
Jesse Jackson.
That's right. I'm talking about Jesse Jackson. See, but let me tell you. See, God got a way. He let you. You're going to reap what you sow, and you're going to reap it right here on earth. And he's reaping it. God is putting it in afflictions and bringing them down. Because he had pimped so much off of his people. And he have used his people. And that's what's happening to us even today. We're listening to the State of the Union address. Do you know, I can bet you this. Donald Trump going to take money and coat the black church. He's going to come to the black church. And the black preacher going to have his hand out. And because he started it before.
That's right.
He started it before. And they're going to have a hand out and take that money, and they're going to tell that congregation how to vote. Because, see, the thing about it now is poor white people, he did it with racism all up in West Virginia and Arizona and all out in those places. They listened to Donald Trump on the racist tip.
Right.
Now they see him for what they is, what he is, rather. They see him for what he is.
Right.
So now he got to get a new group to lie to. You understand?
I hear you.
He got to get a new group. So that's what that State of Union address was all about. I listened to what he said about. Now, what good? Why are you going to spend thousands, millions of dollars building a wall to keep somebody out? When the people just come on anyway, because they can come through. And why keep them out? Why is they so much better than some of the other immigrants that we have had here? Because we all immigrants, tell you the truth, unless you're American Indian.
Well, Reverend, hold on a second. I want to jump back to something you said earlier with the Jesse Jackson situation.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to give you a hug or...
That's right, and I ain't want... Nope.
What did you say to him?
Your woman said, do you want to say it on air?
Oh, is it a curse word?
Yeah, he did that. I didn't want anybody to say it to him. He hit me, though. I said, get the hell off me. You know you ain't worth head. Well, I didn't say it. I said a S word, too. Okay? Get the hell off me. You know, I know you ain't worth. Because I know him personally.
Didn't you call him the devil?
And he ain't nothing, that's what I call him. He nothing but the devil walking down here. One of the devil disciples. I told him, walking around down here, using his own people. Using his own people.
I mean, did Reverend Barber see that?
Reverend Barber know that. He know it. He said, you know, his thing was, you and Jesse still got it going on. He said, y'all still got that. Yeah, I don't forget. I ain't, you know, I know what he is. And he ain't changed. You would think he'd have got older and changed. There were things Reverend did in her life. See, that's why I can say people can change. And Reverend felt certain racist things in her life. And I can tell you that I've changed. I've changed. Because I grew up in a racist situation.
Right.
And I used to think that, and see, then you get in with folks and they say, oh, white people.
Right.
Well, let me tell you, when it comes to Reverend, it has always been majority white men. Mm-hmm. I had a white priest.
Mm-hmm.
Father Witchland was like a sucking father.
Mm-hmm.
Stuck by me no matter what. And where I would go, he would find me even when they locked me up out there demonstrating, out there fighting in the struggle, and they tried to make like they couldn't find me. Father Witchland make them find me. And he stuck with me and my children even when my husband left me.
Wow.
Even when my husband went on about his business, left me with all of them children, Father Witchland always was there to help me, okay? Father Witchland is a white man. And he's an Irishman.
Right.
He was an Irishman, but he was white. But he stuck by me just like a father, okay? Now, there's another white man in my life that I will always love. He is gone on. He gone on and left me. He's dead. That's Michael Brand.
Oh, yes.
Mike was my brother. Me and Mike been through the struggle. We went through the storm and the rain. And we was out there in the struggle together. Mike was a college professor.
Right.
That's how I met him. He was one of my professors. And we had the same politics.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the same political beliefs. But not only that, he always stuck by me and always fought for me. Always was there. No matter what, Michael Brand was always there with me. I remember Nelson Perry. We was all in CLP together. The Communist Labor Party, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the Communist Labor Party, for people who don't know it, was started by a black man, Nelson Perry.
Oh, you know, I never... Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm going to try to see if I can get Nelson's book for you.
Okay.
I had one, but I let the brothers in the prison read it, and I never really got it back. But Nelson started CLP.
Yeah.
Okay? And Nelson used to, everybody used to laugh. Because if you seen Mike, you seen Annie. And if you try to attack either one of us, we deal with you. We were brothers and sisters. We were that tight. Our mate knew that Mike and Annie, George, my husband at the time, come from Alabama. Actually come from New Orleans. But he was basically raised up in the middle years in Alabama.
Right.
And when Mike, he got with me, and I said, you got to meet my brother. And I introduced him to Mike. He looked at me like I was crazy. But him and Mike, because George said, I never dealt with white people. He used to say that. But him and Mike, see, that's what I'm saying about that race thing. Him and Mike became closer as two brothers.
And your ex, your late husband, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
George, do you want to leave who he is on the air?
George? Yeah, George Smith. He was James Brown's bass player.
Right.
Giorgio, that was my second husband, as a matter of fact.
Right.
But anyway, George and Mike were like brothers. And George said he never, in his lifetime, never, ever in his, and he said, I never wanted to deal with white people, but he dealt with Mike, wow. And then dealing with Mike, and dealing with other people in the party, he seen that you can't lump everybody in one situation.
No.
You can't lump a whole race in one situation. Right. And then again, let me tell you, that's what I'm saying about people who really see the truth and accept it, even though they've been taught another way.
Right.
Even though they've been taught another way.
Right.
Or seen another way.
Right.
Because I had a friend that I knew, didn't know her, who husband was in the county out there in Claggett, little county here in Maryland, is one of the, I ain't been there in years and years, but they said they ain't changed that much, but was most racist, and her husband was the grand dragon of the Ku Klux Klan, but he was so mean to her and her children. And when I went out there to help people get food stamps, I got to, you know, talk to her. I helped her get away from her husband. She came to Baltimore, and she lived in public housing until she died.
Wow, really?
But me and her became great friends. Mm-hmm. Now, you know what she said? She didn't even know that black people could live as good as we were living.
Really?
And I was poor then, and still poor today. I lived in public housing, but I was living in rehab housing. And when she got, and when I went to Claggett, the sewage was running down the back of the people's house.
Oh my God.
It was terrible. But won't nothing up there but poor white people. And they was calling me a nigger.
I mean, what do they think? I mean,
it was out of ignorance.
They just could not see their own.
See,
situation.
Right, no. There was prejudice that they were taught all their life.
Wow.
So I don't know why they would think, you know, because when she got to my house, I lived on Gifford Avenue.
Right.
She said to me, you mean niggas live like this?
Damn.
And I said, well, first of all, I'm going to tell you this. You got to stop saying that word. You will get beat to death. See, I worked with many people, so I knew people, learned that. Mm-hmm. I say, you got to stop saying that word. But you'd be surprised how people live. And I just walked up like 3 blocks up and got up to one of my sister's houses, which I didn't never had a fancy house because that ain't me.
Right.
I just had a house, big old house, and some food and some eating, stuff like that, right?
Right.
Well, she seen how fancy my sister's house was. She, okay, baby. She, she seen how fancy my sister's house was. She couldn't believe it. She thought my sister was rich.
Wow, really?
I said, no, she poor too. She just worked. We just worked for a living. Like everybody else.
Wow.
So that you know.
Yeah.
Those are the things that I, you know, I see and tell people about all the time. That racism is a thing that's taught. It is not something that you're born of. If you put two babies together, they don't know who's black or who's white. They just grow up as children, and you know, is Michael's son, Sam, used to say, I used to wonder why I was a little lighter than everybody else in the house. Because he always had to stay at my house while we traveling around, right?
I know quite a few people, you know, in the neighborhood, you know, in Baltimore that credit you for raising them.
Yeah.
You know, quite a few.
Yeah, I mean, and so we would just put the children in there. I'd throw all the children in my house. Because, see, I was one of them people, like, I didn't have furniture you couldn't jump on. I didn't have furniture, you know, I didn't have furniture you couldn't sit on. You could sit on the floor. You could sit, you know, jump around. You could play and run all through the big house. You know, Ray Cece's son, Sharon, black son.
Right.
That's why he called me his godmother, Stephen.
Right.
He attacked, that's why he said, yeah, that's white, my godmother.
He's black, but he's white. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's his name. Yeah.
You know, Sherry Honka lived with you.
Yeah,
for a while.
Sherry. You know, we were just, it didn't matter to me about the color of a child
right.
or people. And I'm glad my children grew up not really knowing the hard racism, but I always made sure they understood it.
You know, Reverend, we do have to wrap up, but I do want to just point out, you know, I mean, we could wrap up one or two ways. We could talk about the State of the Union, but I'd like to hear you talk about, if you don't mind, you know, you told me about the man, Fells Point, that you used to help.
Oh, yeah. His name is Mr. John. Mr. John Seco needed at least one black organizer to get this grant. They didn't have no black organizers.
Okay.
So they hired me to work for them.
What was CECO?
CECO was a community organization, Southeast Baltimore community.
Oh,
that's
okay,
CECO.
Okay, yeah.
They never had black organizers. I was their first.
Wow. When was this? Do you know?
Yeah, I know very well. 1974. No, it's 1973. 1973. They hired me. Because that's when they wanted to take the lower part of Baltimore Street. Remember, it used to be a whole lot of Columbia Indians.
Yeah.
And all of them live up there then, right?
Right.
So they asked them, did they have a minority? They didn't have no blacks on their staff. And so they came and asked me, and I said, yeah. I was living up there, up the upper part of Patterson Park.
Right.
And I said, okay, I went. So they stuck me down in the heart of, down in the very lower part of South Baltimore, Southeast Baltimore, really down, you know, where wasn't no black people down
Fells
there.
Fells Point, right?
Yeah, further down. Even further down.
Oh, really?
Fells Point. Oh. Fells Point. But even wasn't no Columbia Indians down there.
No, that's a really white area. And
where right.
you were living all the way up in Patterson Park, which is north,
yeah, uh-huh.
wasn't exactly a black-friendly area.
No, it wasn't a... I think it was only one other black family, but we were the first black family up there.
But in Fells Point, it was a very white working class
yes.
enclave. In fact, a friend of mine actually did a sociological thing. I don't know what academics call it. I guess a dissertation or something on the white on white gentrification that took place in Fells Point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now it's considered upper class.
Seco was a part of that.
You know,
they was a part of. Pushed the poor white people
out.
So Mr. John lived down there, owned his little house down there. You know, they got little small,
really
small houses.
I mean, you can't even believe it unless you go down and see how small these houses are. Two stories,
and
you can barely get yourself in and out.
I'm telling you. I don't know why they said it was two stories, but anyway, Paul Creeter, he owned a house down there. And they sent me to knock on each door to talk to the people, to tell them about CECO and the meetings and everything, and if they would come to the meeting, and, you know, like they always do, the little giveaways they get people to get them in so they can get them out.
Right.
Anyway, I knocked on Mr. John, though, and I was knocking doors, and some people was... They didn't say, you know, mean things to me. They would just look at me like, you show your work for CECO, girl.
Damn.
I said, yes, I do. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do. But when I got to Mr. John's door and knocked on the door, old white man, he come to the door. Yeah, what you want, nigga? I said, good morning, sir. My name is Annie, and I'm here to invite you to... I don't know me, man. No, no. I said, oh, no, it's only white people's day, sir. Bam, he slammed the door.
Damn.
Next day, I knocked on the door again. Didn't I tell you, girl, don't knock on my door? I said, oh, I don't mean no harm, sir. They just send me out to try to get everybody who need help to get help. And since I work for CECO, I'm make sure you get the same help everybody else is. Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. John was in a wheelchair, old wheelchair.
Oh, really?
And he couldn't hardly get around. You know, he could walk some, but not, you know, really get around.
Was his house one story or two?
It was a two-story.
Okay, it was.
Well, I would have said
he couldn't even use the top
of his house.
Wow.
And he had an old cot. He used to, you could see right there where he laid on this cot in his house.
Oh, my God.
So, I said, please, sir, just let me, give me a few minutes. Yeah, I'm going to give you what you want. So, first day, he stood in the door. I mean, he sat down in the door, and I talked to him. And he wanted to talk about Spurs Point and stuff like
right,
that. And
yeah.
I stood there and listened.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Big old industrial area.
Yeah,
down.
Big. Then the third day,
right.
I went there. He talked about Spurs Point and what he used to do.
Okay.
And I listened. Because you that's what you do as an organizer. You see where the people at. You don't try to put
yeah,
your.
Yeah.
So I listened. And then, but he always looked cold, and you know, you could tell a person ain't being really taken care of or not taking care of himself.
You mean he looked physically cold?
Yeah,
like
look,
he was in the cold.
Yeah, he was in the cold.
And he wasn't eating,
and stuff. And so the fourth day I came, I brought this big thing, a Nick Bone soup.
Oh, okay.
I mean, soup. And I offered it to him, and he took it. He was glad to get it.
Oh, all right.
Thank you, thank you. So he said, you be back tomorrow.
Now he wanted you back?
So I said, I'm coming back tomorrow. The next day, I brought him some chicken soup, chicken back soup.
Wow.
He was so glad to get it. And I said, do you like coffee? He said, yeah. I said, well, you want me to make you some coffee because, you know, you can't hardly, you know, move around a lot. I can do help you.
Yeah.
So then he, you know, was, come on in, open the door.
Oh, wow.
Don't knock, come on in.
Wow.
So I would go to his house and make him coffee and bring him food and stuff. And then I seen that his bathroom was broken, you know, the plumbing.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So I got one of the men that I know to come and fix his bathroom. And he wanted to know, I said, don't cost nothing, you know. But I knew that. And then he liked to drink beer.
Yeah.
But it was this bar down on the two blocks down he couldn't get to. I used to roll him down to the bar.
In a wheelchair?
In the wheelchair.
Wow.
Let him get in the bar. I said, I tell him what time I'd be back. I come back and get him, roll him back home before I go home myself.
Wow.
And so he would tell everybody thought I was working for him.
Uh-huh.
Because I started cleaning him up, you know. I said, no, Mr. John, yeah, you got to wash your face and hands and stuff, and you can't be looking like that. So he used to tell me, you are with me like you my damn wife or something. I believe you. Yeah, so he's that what he used to call me. Call me his black wife.
Damn.
But poor old soul, all through, I think that must have went on for about 4 years.
Really?
Yeah, it went on for about 4 years. Even after CECO, I stopped. After me and another organizer, Charlotte Hackett, found out, but she was the Columbia Indian.
Right.
And we found out what they were doing, and we was trying to organize the Columbia Indians to fight back, not to be able to make them move from down there.
Right.
But anyway, I would still go back and see about Mr. John. I would still carry him his food and stuff. And, you know, he would always be glad to see me. Mm-hmm. He would always greet me. Oh, come on in! And then it got so if I knock on the door, he'd lay me out for knocking on the door. You know that door! Come on in here! You know, and I... Oh, and then when he passed, he had all wrote down that I was his very best friend.
Wow.
And he was, and I never knew that this man had a sister.
Right.
He had a sister. He had a daughter that lived in New York and stuff. And he said if I wanted something out of his house, well, I ain't really want nothing out of his house. But his daughter said, well, Daddy said, if it's something you want, I said, no. But me and him had taken this picture one time when they had the community fair. We had taken this picture together.
Oh.
Me and him, he was in the wheelchair and I was behind him.
That's so nice.
In the wheelchair. And she said, I really want this, the only picture my daddy had in his house. And I said, honey, you can keep the picture. I, you know, because he's in my heart and I remember him.
Wow.
But see, Mr. John changed because he got to know the truth. He grew up all his life one way. And he was poor as dirt.
Yeah.
But he was, to make him think that he was better than me because I was black and he was white.
Wow.
You understand? He got so, he never even... Other black people, he wouldn't say black. He wouldn't say the N-word. Because I used to tell him, that don't sound right.
Wow.
That don't sound like that. Wow. Don't, you know, people don't like that. You ain't supposed to say that. And I, Paul Creedy never had no teeth in him.
Teeth?
He didn't have any teeth in his mouth, Ian, at all. Poor fella. So I used to make sure I cooked stuff he could really, really eat. But I used to always make sure he got at least a good meal once a day. Once a day, I would make sure.
Nice.
But that, see, that's what we can do. And we can do as people. I would like to raise the word race removed from the human. This is a human, we the human race.
Wow.
Not black, white, whatever, brown, yellow, whatever. Just we all created one way. When people like to say, well, God created us from the earth, I said, don't you see all different colored earth? Black, yellow, red,
mm-hmm.
white, all of the, so if he created us, maybe he just created all of us from certain one race from this earth, you know.
Right.
So we all human. We from the human race. When I write on any form, and they say race, I write human.
Do you really?
I write human.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I am. I'm human.
I can't, I just, you know, you are black. You are Black Panther. I mean, you know.
Yes, yes.
And you still put down human.
Human.
Okay.
I was a Black Panther, and I'm very proud of that.
Yeah.
But see, that's what I was saying again when we talk about the governor of Virginia.
Right.
Things can change in your life.
Right.
I was all, one time I was a black nationalist too. See, nobody knew that.
I had a feeling.
Yeah, I was a black nationalist. But see.
But I know now you talk to black nationalists and tell them that's not
the
case.
No,
no. So, I mean, you know.
No. So we all
can
change
and
learn. This, it can be a learning experience. And I'm just saying, not taking up for the man. I don't know him, never talked to him, never did anything with any, had any dealings with either one of them. But just saying that we can all learn.
Right.
And then when you, if you was a child and I constantly tell you a chicken was a dog, you'd call that chicken a dog. Because that's what you grew up.
What you know.
That's all you know.
Right.
That's all you know. You know, I say things, certain things now. I say my daddy said, my second husband used to really, he said, but I ain't your daddy. I used to tell him things. I said, "My," he'd look at me, he said, but I ain't your daddy. And I said, well, my daddy, he said, didn't I tell you I ain't your daddy?
Yeah.
You know?
We're going to leave it there.
Okay.
We got to go anyway.
This is Reverend Mama Anderson. God bless y'all. Stay strong.
All right. And this is the inside. Good night, y'all.
Mm-hmm.